That assumption shuts down the latent power of our opposable mind before it can be engaged. And to understand why, let's look at how our minds process some of the data that swarms over and around us daily. Lots of data we are getting bombarded with. And how does the mind operate? How does it take all this data? The world gets filtered. We swim in a veritable ocean of data every day. We don't drown in it because we are born with a capacity to shape it into something meaningful. Whatever I see around, I make a meaning of it. That's the way the human brain has been designed by the Almighty, right? In the process, what we do is we ignore a lot of data that does not seem meaningful to us. There is no guarantee that we will not filter out valuable data in our drive to create a meaning of the world. So many times we do this. The most important thing I need to pack to go on a tour, I forget at home. At that point of time, it was not salient because it was not there in my mind. It was not in my radar. Since it was not there in my radar, what happens? I have missed it out. The most important thing. And then when I go to that particular location, I start searching for it in my bag. And then if at all I think, I can recall that, oh my God, I left it at home. This is what happens because of the way our mind filters. If I'm doing some job, I get so focused only in that job that I tend to forget everything around me. And focus has been given undue importance. Focus is important, but focus has come at a cost. People are so focused that they're oblivious about anything happening 1 millimeter here, 1 millimeter there, beyond the range of focus. Focus is important, but the focus coming with an awareness about the whole picture is the focus which we are talking about, right? So we filter the data in order to save our brains from mental collapse. If every data around me is going into my system right now, I'll have a mental collapse and a breakdown, leading to what psychiatrists call it schizophrenia. You know, multiple disorders I'll get in my brain, split personality, Jekyll and Hyde, we have heard of. Those are the various things the brain cannot take beyond the capacity. So, you know, we talk about burnouts today. We talk about mental breakdowns. Now, there are people who are into so much of so-called multitasking, which does not make meaningfulness to them, and then they get into trouble. Multitasking can be done using integrative approach. The word is very glamorous in industry today. Everybody wants to talk about multiple tasking. I want to do this. Everything is done in a hodgepodge manner. No meaningfulness for the person who's doing it. They come and confess to me as managers and tell me, look, I'm doing all these things, but I'm not complete into it. But I have to do it. Now, if that is an imperative, people do it. But beyond the imperative, there's a growth. In the growth, these type of disintegrated tasks which I do, you and I do, does not take us towards the integration into seeing the whole picture. A number of head of the departments, HODs, have come across, put in about nearly, say, 15 to 20 years experience in that vertical. They are supposed to be experts having been there. But they come and confess on their own that there are areas of my thing I've never got in touch with because everything has been on a fast roll. Too many things at the same time is okay. But am I integrating those too many things at the same time? That's very important. All of you who are doing multitasking, including me, we have to realize one thing, that a multitasking should be integrated with each other. It may sound a little different for many of you, I'm sure. For example, if I'm preparing PowerPoint slides for this particular presentation, and along with that, I need to do another multitasking of sending a teaching learning plan for an MBA course to the institute. Now, these two appear to be two different things. In a typical multitasking, what people do a little bit of this, get bored and come to this, get bored and go back to this, and do something and send both. Am I right? Instead, what I do, I can tell you, I sit down, I look at my PowerPoint presentation which I'm preparing. I see the connection between this and my teaching learning plan. And then I see what are the common energies I have in me. What are the saliences I have? What is the causality of mixing both of them together? What's the architecture I can create wherein I can do both of them comfortably well, that too with the effective utilization of resources? What have I done? I have kept myself open to both. I have not said this or that. This first and that second. I have not done that. So when I do this, my resolution, the actions that I take, comes out so smooth, let me confess, it's really amazing. Now, if you can practice multitasking in this manner, every task that you're doing is interconnected. Even if it appears to be remotely connected, but still it is interconnected. It reduces a tremendous amount of stress. We are handling a lot of multi-generic activities in a day, are we not? See, I am into teaching, and I also need to do some other things which are not into teaching. They all come together. We take them one after the other serially. Don't we do that? Sequentially. We take first and the second, we do our scheduling. Important, no doubt. But during the scheduling process, we tend to miss out on something which we don't want to do. We reject it. It becomes the last priority list in our time management. When you infuse integrative thinking in yourself, you'll find that you'll put a timetable which is a schedule linearly going down. At the same time, you look at the whole thing and you start capturing the total map. When you capture the total map, you know how your engines start getting fired inside and you're able to do the task much better. Try it and see. Try it and see. When too many tasks come together on a timeline, people do get overwhelmed. And when you get overwhelmed, you know what you do as a conventional thinker? You eliminate by default what is not pleasurable for you. And hence we find that we keep on repeating those activities which are pleasurable and we eliminate those which are not pleasurable to us. The ones that are important for me, I do. The ones which are not important for me, I do not do. The one which is important for the organization in which I am working, I reject because it's not important for me at that point of time. And then what happens? The deadline comes, it becomes urgent and important. And then I'm into stress. And then somehow I'll do a hodgepodge job, no excellence, no quality, and I deliver it. This happens in many cases. Think of these scenarios. These are the areas where integrative management can be put into practice. People are doing it. The subject is so profound, it's a way of life with you and me. And how we do it is important. Haven't you come across people who do multitasking? They are very relaxed. They are very full of energy. In the morning you see them, they are fresh. In the evening, when they are going back home also, they look fresh. They know to conserve energy. To my mind, to my experience, integrative management has been a lot of energy conservation for me. It really helped me a lot. It makes me focus at the same time, include everything into the focus so that everything takes place very well sequentially without any breaks or without any either or approach. Okay? So if we fail to do, we become schizophrenic and overwhelming data if not handled properly fragments conceptual systems. What does it mean by that? It means conceptual system means I have to handle one type of work. It requires one type of thinking. I have to handle another type of work which requires another type of thinking. Going to the bank, I need to have one type of thinking and mindset. Now, coming to the institute and teaching, I need to have a different type of mindset. Both of them are different conceptual systems. Now, if my brain doesn't have the capacity to eliminate data, I won't be able to handle these two conceptual systems separately. Conventional thinking. Now, if both of these data can come together, both these concepts can come together, which is what integrative thinking talks about, then both of them become integrative and easy to handle. Are we talking about capturing more and more data that is overwhelming us? No. We are only saying that what is important for me in conceptual system A, in conceptual system B, we integrate them. And when you integrate them, you realize you're seeing more than what you saw before. You're seeing more than what you saw before. Right? So, let's take it further. Here we talk about difference in perception. So, in this slide, I'm going to be talking about what is called as the difference in perception. Difference in perception. Now, there's a Japanese film which came some years back, some almost about 3-4 decades back, which goes by the name of Rashomon. Now, the Rashomon is a particular type of effect. Rashomon effect, we call it. It's an effect in which a certain incident takes place, and the same incident is interpreted by different people in different manner. It's human nature. Imagine an accident on the roads, and you'll ask five people what happened. Each one will give his interpretation. Like I told you about the newspaper headline, right? So here we are talking about what is called as a corporate Rashomon. The Rashomon effect is a term that has been used by a number of different scholars, journalists and film critics to refer to contradictory interpretations of the same events by different persons. A problem arises in the process of uncovering truth. One of the things that happens in the court of law whenever a case is being fought is that the same incident is interpreted and narrated by different people in a different way. Whether they're telling lies or truth is not the issue. The point is what exactly happened. So for that what exactly happened, which is the actual reality, there'll be multiple interpretations of reality by different people. And that is what is a phrase that we call as a corporate Rashomon. The Rashomon effect that happens in an organization is a corporate Rashomon, right? There's a small case which we'll be discussing now, a small caselet rather, which is going to explain the Rashomon effect in this particular module, right? The phrase derives from the movie Rashomon, where the account by four witnesses of a rape and murder are different. It's not a pretty sight when we confuse a simplified models of reality with reality itself in all its richness, complexity. Now, let me dwell a little upon this. You know, what we do is we try to simplify life. All of us would like to have a simple life. We try to simplify whatever is happening around us so that it becomes manageable. The purpose of simplification is to manage something. But when we get into simplification, we miss out on those richness of what we have actually not taken into account, what we have lost. So there is a need for us to simplify. Simplification is important. Simplification gives me control, charge and comfort zone of whatever I am doing. But in the bargain, you know what happens? We tend to miss out on the complexity, the richness of life. For example, a person may say that I would like to lead a simple life, and the person may not want to go anywhere beyond his home. So he will go to the workplace and come back home and he'll have a quiet life, and he will be very simple and focused and very serene. This may happen for 1, 2, 3, 5, 6 years, 8 years. He would have never gone for a vacation as well. He must have not seen places. He must have not gone and seen people also. Now what happens to this person? He is in a comfort zone, simple life, simple living, fair enough. But God forbid, suppose he is exposed to some new incident that comes out of the blue. He doesn't have the skills to actually go along and attend to that effectively. He must have never gone to places. If he has to go to a certain place, he doesn't know how to travel. He doesn't know how to deal with certain people of different cultures. He doesn't know how to go and adapt himself to living in some place other than his home. Now, this is what happens when you are simplifying. Simplification is not bad. It's a must. It's something that makes your life manageable. But in the bargain, are we excluding ourselves from the richness of reality? That's a question. Okay? Our capacity for filtering information meant to make sense of the world can instead make sense for confusion and conflict. When I simplify, I see my point of view and I decide that my point of view is the right point of view. I do not have knowledge about the other point of view because I've never explored it. This is one caution which all of us need to understand. I know a person, for example, who is a introvert, who is a person who doesn't talk to many people but accomplished in the workplace. Now that person has reached a senior position and is looking for a change. At a senior position, that person has never done any networking with people, getting in touch with people, talking to them, knowing the peer group, not much. So when this person is looking for a change, it's quite tough because the networking has not been done. Not a natural a person who can go and talk to people. If I give a name or a phone number and ask that person to go and call that person, the card which I've given, they will hesitate a lot because that skill they have not done. Now, through that simplification of living life that way, that person has restricted to not to change. Now, this is something that happens, and then there's a lot of anguish, a lot of frustration, all because I stick onto my way, it is working for me, and I feel extremely uncomfortable to take anything new, even if I know that it is good for me. Right? So this is what happens to us. Now here we talk about a very simple conversation between three people. It's a setting in which two senior people, two vice presidents of the same company are visiting a customer. Here goes. Sally and Bill, two vice presidents of a company called Vision Tech, visit a customer. The customer is stating, he is saying three sentences. I really like Vision Tech. It's been an innovative leader in this business for a long time, but I'm coming under increasing cost pressure and I have to make trade-offs. What does he say? I like Vision Tech. I really like Vision Tech. Good company, right? It has been an innovative leader in this business for a long time. A compliment. But I'm coming under increasing cost pressure and I have to make trade-offs. I have to make compromises. Now, these three sentences are uttered by him. And there are two people who are listening to him, Sally and Bill. Both of them are vice presidents from the same company, Vision Tech. Now, what happens? Sally's thinking process. Sally hears the customer and concludes, innovation and leadership are the most critical avenues for Vision Tech to pursue. It is as if Sally is capturing a message through her own reality which she has created within her. She is capturing a message from the customer, and her message which she is capturing says that innovation and leadership are the most critical avenues for Vision Tech to pursue. She feels that this customer is telling her that you guys, Vision Tech, please focus on innovation and leadership. This is what she feels. Right? Bill, on the other hand, hears the customer and concludes, Vision Tech has got to get cost down so that Vision Tech can be price competitive. He is capturing the latter part of the sentence and is interpreting it in his own way. He is capturing this part which says, but I'm coming under increasing cost pressure and I have to make trade-offs. And so he is concluding, or rather inferring, saying that Vision Tech has to get costs down so that Vision Tech can be price competitive. Now who's right? Who's wrong? We know it. Both of them are wrong and both of them are right. Or neither, right? Both heard the customer correctly but arrived at opposite strategy for Vision Tech. Is this reflecting what happens in organizations where you guys are working? The answer is yes. Same meeting, 10 people are listening to the manager who's talking in the meeting, making some presentations, making some proposals, extracting some targets from the people who are present there. And then after the meeting is over, 10 different people will have something like 20, 30, 50, 100 interpretations, right? It's very common. Now what happens? Let's take it further. Sally filtered out the data contained in the last sentence of the customer statement regarding the cost pressures. She did not give cognizance to that. Probably she is not from that area. Probably she is a person who is coming from a strategic work, not from the viewpoint of cost or pricing, possibly, right? She interpreted the customer's telling Bill and her that he places high value on Vision Tech's innovation and leadership. Customer used the word likes, and Sally interpreted the word likes into values. This is another pitfall where all of us fall into. You use a word which I interpret differently. I use a word which you interpret differently. The purpose of you using the word is lost as much as the purpose of my using the word is lost. Very hilarious examples. This actually creates a lot of misunderstandings, and our work goes in a wrong direction in many cases. It's important that we actually pause, ask questions, get answers, and then proceed. But that's not what we are discussing here. Here we are talking, focusing on integrative thinking and how the mechanism works, how the process works. By changing like to value, Sally has established a causal relationship that was never there in the customer's original statement. Again, this particular thing that was never there in the customer statement is the interpretation of the author himself who is narrating this case. Please get this very straight. When I'm writing a story, I'm the author. And then two people are reading my story. One says, in the story, this character is doing this. In the second one, somebody says this character is doing that. And I'm saying this character is not doing that or this, it's doing something else. That is again my interpretation. All authors write their own interpretation of reality. All authors give their narration of what they want to write. And their narration is their narration. It's not the narration. There's a difference. Right? So, Sally's resolution on the next slide is based on her mental construction and not on her objective reality. Here goes the slide. Again, the four steps are there. Salience, causality, architecture and resolution. Sally's thinking process is shown here. Her salience, what she gives importance is, I really like Vision Tech. It has been an innovative leader for a long time. That's important for her. Since it is important for her, she has a related thinking in that direction, which is the causality. Customers value leadership and innovation. So all her action step will be in that direction. The architecture she creates for an action will be, customers will stick on only if we continue to innovate and lead. And so she is resolving, she is deciding more or less in her mind that innovation and leadership are the most critical avenues to pursue. If a strategic decision making is in her hands, she would go along and implement it. Fortunately, in companies, we got a group of people who take strategic decisions. So this is her interpretations. And when she interprets this and she puts it into action, it may lead to a disaster. That is how many organizations have this corporate Rashomon effect happening to them, as a result of which a certain strategic decision maker takes a decision, sometimes unquestioned, and then the decision flops miserably. So many cases are there. He or she is so very successful in the past, so many years of past success, people almost assume that they are clairvoyants. They are people who will never fail. They can read the future. Now, nothing can be far from truth, because my success until yesterday was because of yesterday's success factors. Tomorrow's success will be something which will be based on a new way of looking at it, for which I need to be open to accepting opposing ideas and opposing views. Right? Now, taking the next one, Bill's thinking process. Bill filtered out the data contained in the first two sentences of this customer statement and focused only on the cost pressures. Starting with that salient reality, Bill constructs a generalization that Vision Tech's customers are under intense cost pressure. That's his view, which leads Bill to conclusion that Vision Tech's customers will migrate away because of Vision Tech's pricing. So he feels that Vision Tech has to be very conscious about what pricing they do. If the pricing is not acceptable to the customer, they may run away. That's a view of Bill. Bill arrives at the resolution. We have to get our cost down if we continue to stay price competitive. Right? Now let's see what happens in this particular diagram. Now here we have got Bill's reality and here we have got Sally's reality. We're just mapping it on either side. So I really like Vision Tech. It has been an innovative leader for a long time. Sally. Bill says, I'm coming under increasing cost pressure and I have to make trade-offs. His salience for taking a decision, for taking a resolution. Sally says, customers value leadership and innovation. Bill says, customers are feeling intense cost pressures. He's already taken into the thinking process and further into architecture. Now Sally says, customers will stick if we continue to innovate and lead. And Bill says, customers will migrate away from us due to our cost and pricing. Already they are coming closer to the action steps, both of them. And now the action which Sally is proposing to take is, innovation and leadership are most critical avenues to pursue. And Bill is about to take an action which says, get cost down so that we stay price competitive. Now imagine these two are two different thought processes and actions which both of them are resolving to take. Which one should we take? We must integrate both. We must understand that both the realities have to be merged together. The reality of Bill, the reality of Sally, both of them are having different interpretations of the same conversation with the customer had with them. Could they integrate them together? And then arrive at something which is a healthy combination of both, or they may come out with an alternative which is not Sally's reality, nor is it Bill's reality. That's integrative thinking, right? Now, Bill's reality says get cost down. A picture of a gentleman whom we could like to call Bill is put here. And then we also have Sally here. She says innovation and leadership are the key issues, right? And now, on return from the customer meet, Bill says, he tells Sally, we risk losing our client base if we do not get our cost down. And then Sally gets completely, she's surprised. She's flabbergasted. Did we attend the same interview? She asks herself, she muses. Or does Bill have his own agenda for cost cutting? Or is he putting his own managerial pressure to talk while talking to me? Aloud she says, but Bill, our clients are counting on us to show leadership in innovation. Bill in turn cannot believe his ears. He's wondering, again he may be wondering the same thing. Did both of us attend the same meeting or different? And then what happens? The communication breakdown between Bill and Sally is a consequence of their individual mental models of reality. They fall into the trap. What we think we see is a reality. They fall into the trap. What I see is my reality. This trap is there in all of us. So both of them have fallen into it. This tendency makes it difficult for us to know what to do with opposing and seemingly unequal models. If you are a conventional thinker, when you're faced with this thing, suppose Sally and Bill are reporting to you, you're the CEO, and they come to you and they give you this report, what are you supposed to do? What will you do if you're a conventional thinker? You may take Sally's, you may reject Bill's, or vice versa. You might do either of the two actions. But if you're a CEO with an integrative thinking, then you might look into possibilities about this and that, or maybe something different, right? So our first impulse is to determine which one represents reality and which one is unreal and wrong. Then we campaign against the one we reject, and instead of holding it in our mind and miss out on the value that can be created by holding two opposing models at the same time, right? This is what we would normally do. We disengage the opposable mind before we can seek creative resolution. This is very natural for most of us. Since Sally felt what she felt, the cost part of it did not matter to her. She will immediately disengage. She will only think about innovation leadership. Now, I like to discuss about when opposites collide. When opposites collide is covering how there are two opposite thoughts in me to do something and not to do something else. When these two thoughts are coming to you and somebody tells you to do what you don't want to do, then in your mind there is always an opposite colliding. You would like to go for a certain sales pitch as a salesman, and your senior, your manager tells you, no, don't go here, go to another sales pitch. You don't want to go there for your own reasons. Now, when you go there reluctantly, would you be able to do your job effectively? No. Now, if you take the manager's suggestion of going to the other place, which collides with your thought of going to the place A, then both these things create a certain type of a stress in you. One is a compulsion which you don't like to do. The other one is something which is pleasurable for you to do. We all do this. We like to do things which are pleasurable, on which we have already made a choice. And when something is pleasurable and I do it because it's my choice, I don't want things which are non-pleasurable for me. But when that non-pleasurable thing is put in front of me to be done, maybe as a duty or a pressure or something, do I do it? I don't do it. I reject it. Either or approach. But when that non-pleasurable thing comes to me and it's colliding with my pleasurable thing and I apply integrative thinking, it's no more a collision. It's more of a merging. Okay? So, the integrative thinkers have learned to change their factory settings and distinguish between reality and models of reality. Unlike the rest of us, they do not need to take sides. They don't take sides. They don't take sides. If Bill is coming and telling me something, Sally is coming and telling me something, and I'm an integrative thinker, I listen to both of them and then mix and match their views and then come out with something different. If I'm not an integrative thinker, I may either accept Sally's words and I will go by Sally, rejecting Bill, or I may accept Bill's word and I reject Sally in the bargain. Right? It's not a choice of this model or that model. They are all wrong. See what you can do to combine those multiple perspectives and enhance the quality of a mental model. Try, come out with something newer and ensure that it is actually sustaining and doing more good and effectiveness in the long run. It has to sustain, right? Later we shall see how we can go about changing our factory setting to do the same. You see it in the future discussions.